Hello, everyone. Welcome to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I'm your host, Duststorm.
And I'm your other host, Biowolf.
And we're back for yet another exciting podcast for Hunt the Truth. It keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger and more epic and epic and epic. And this week's episode is no exception whatsoever. We finally get to where Ben presents his evidence to the Oni senators this week.
And it was a bit nerve-wracking. I mean, could you imagine being in his position right now? Bringing all this hard-kept secret stuff about the Spartan program and presenting it in front of, what, millions? Possibly close to billions? I don't know. Like how far was that going out there? Like, that was a live stream that was all over everywhere, wasn't it?
No, this was just to the closed session between the senators and the ONI directors.
Okay, so that wasn't...
I don't know what you're talking about.
I thought this was broadcast on the news. Like, I thought that was also something they're going to be broadcasting on the news.
No.
Wasn't it?
No.
Oh, okay, never mind then.
You're talking about this podcast?
No. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the interview with Anthony Petrosky. Like, wasn't that in that whole thing with him going live? Wasn't Pharaoh supposed to release that too?
No, that was just him going live in that closed session.
Okay.
That was the whole hack thing.
Okay, I gotcha. Anyway, regardless, that's... Yeah. A hellstorm's coming through. He's kind of in trouble. I mean, there's a lot of stuff to talk about, so I'm not going to jump around too much.
There is so much to talk about, and I think there's... where do we even start with this? Because there's just so much that happened in this episode, and granted, there's been so much that's happened leading up to this episode where we've gone through so much of Ben discovering who the chief is, going through all these conspiracies, finding out everything that is being covered up by Oni, and to come to this climax of a story and have all your eggs in one basket has got to be probably the most nerve-wracking experience that Ben has ever had in his career, and is in the position to basically throw his career out the window.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, his career is basically done as it is now anyway. I mean, that basically was done when he started uploading his podcasts to the internet. Like, that was basically done. I mean, and especially now, I mean, him unveiling all this stuff, like, he's pretty much done. And it makes me wonder what his next step is after this. I mean, he revealed all this stuff to this whole thing with the interweb and Anthony Petrosky and all that stuff. And it makes me wonder, is like, what's his next move? What's Pharaoh going to do next to kind of cause more chaos, if you will?
It's going to be crazy, because we know from just what we've heard at the end that Ben's kind of on his own at the moment. We don't know what's going to happen after that. I don't know if there's going to be something that... Because, I mean, we have it at the end where she says that he's under their protection now.
Yep.
So, I don't know. But let's kind of rewind a little bit and go back, kind of recap a little bit from what happened last time. We have everything from the leaks and setting up this big meeting happened in the previous episode. So the senators were on their way to Earth to hold this meeting with ONI directors and get everything in place to have this big discussion on what's been leaked, what Ben's been reporting on, everything that's happened with what Pharaoh has released to the public, all that stuff. So this hack that Pharaoh says that she'll be able to put up is to get Ben a direct feed into this closed door session for him to present all of his evidence in the case against Oni. Everything up to this point has been done on the loose threads that he's constantly been pulling at, and has come to this big realization that Oni has been keeping dark secrets from UEG senators and the nasty realization of what the Spartan program actually is.
Yep.
This is something that we've seen since the first books, really.
Yeah.
Fall of Reach. It's where it started. And that's where the story focuses on. it has come to a head and it's boiling over completely now for Ben. And it's gotten everyone in the outer colonies outraged at Chief and Oni, and everyone in the inner colonies is freaking out of what's going on with the Chief. Why has he gone rogue? Up to this point, Ben is trying to consolidate all of his information that he has. He's trying to get everything and last bits of information that he's still waiting on from Mashaak in place and put together for presenting in front of the senators when the time comes. So at the beginning of this episode, he's interviewing or asking Anthony Petrovsky, who has agreed to do a testimony against Oni, going back through his experience with John. This is the ODST that we mentioned a while ago that was in the boxing ring with John, got drastically injured, where two of his squad mates got killed and the other one severely injured as well. And he's going to testify against Oni. He's been ordered to remain silent about it. He's been ill-treated because of the UNSC not really caring for him anymore. So he's fed up with it. He's put all of his time in and he doesn't really care what happens to himself anymore. He's in the bad shape as it is already. So with him going against Oni, he doesn't feel like he has anything to lose. So he's all up and ready to just completely lay it out on Oni. And you can tell at the beginning of this last episode where Ben is frantically trying to get everything together and is kind of in a panicky state, in a very anxious state. Anthony's all chill and just ready to lay it out.
It's good to see, in his case, I think it's good to see that he is kind of getting the revenge in a way for something that he's permanently messed him up mentally. Two of his squad mates, I don't know how close he was to him, but the fact that they're dead and one of them is permanently like messed up for the rest of his life, like it's pretty bad. If I was in his situation, I think I would pretty much do the same exact thing. If I was in his deal where he wasn't, you know, he didn't really have anything to lose. He was in bad shape as it is. Like, nothing can really honestly be worse than what he's in now. I mean, granted, Oni could be doing, like, torture or something. I don't know. Like, I'm sure they have some creative ways of getting back at people. But it's good to see that he is coming out with this. You know, he doesn't care the consequences. He's going to do it regardless.
I mean, think about being in his position after learning so much about what Oni has done. You're kind of convicted to do something about it, I would think.
Yeah.
I mean, I would be.
Oh, absolutely. I would be, too. There's a lot of shady stuff. And it makes me wonder, too, is like, who else would honestly try to contact Ben to get their side of the story that Oni doesn't want seen either? You know, who else are we going to see that kind of has that, you know, I seen the negative side of Oni that needs to be pushed out there? And with Ben doing this, and it really makes me wonder. I mean, granted, he doesn't have that contact anymore. He can't contact other people and all that stuff. But it would make me wonder who else would be out there trying to help him with this.
So I think the big person that really instigated that was Mashaak. Because you have people that Ben knew just from his time being out in the other colonies. So he knew Ellie. And through Ellie, he knew Katrina and a couple of other people. But he didn't really have anybody that was kind of willing to step up. And at first, Anthony Petrovsky was even hesitant on really even talking because, of course, they were ordered to keep silent about talking anything Spartan related.
Yeah.
It was only until following up on the unapproved sources that Ben was able to find those loose threads and finally turn over to Mashaak, who basically opened the floodgates to what was really going on and giving him the steps to find what is actually out there, what the truth was. So this was more of a kind of an exploration for Ben. And you had these people along the way that kind of posed some questions. But I think Mashaak was the one that kind of really nudged him along in certain directions when it came to actually finding some of the big stories.
Yeah. Yeah, he was kind of his guide in a way to kind of go with it. I mean, the amount of second thoughts he probably had with this. Like, it makes me wonder if Mashaak and all these other people, if he would honestly push the story out on his own. Like, how far he would actually go. Because he was putting out the podcast. That was one thing. But after he realized that Pharaoh was involved, like, Mashaak was kind of in there doing his keeping track of all the stuff that was on his comms and stuff like that. And then Pharaoh comes in and kind of spreads the wildfire, adding gas to the flame, so to speak. Like, it really makes me wonder where he would be now if none of those were involved.
I don't know. It's hard to say.
Yeah, I mean, like, you have all these people that are, you know, really against it. You have people that don't want anything to do with it at all. You know, they think that he's just corrupted. You know, he's been out of the field for a while, so his judgment's completely wrong. And then you have people that are completely backing him up on it. And, I mean, this is something that I was asking a couple of people a while back when we were starting to get into, like, around 7 and 6. We started seeing things develop a little bit more. And one of the questions was, who else could honestly be helping him if none of these guys were there? You know, like, maybe someone from UNSC, maybe from someone in Oni themselves that, like, knows darker stuff. I mean, it really makes me wonder where everything would have been, like, everything would have laid out. It was an interesting talk, though. There was a lot of really far-fetched ideas, but it's interesting to see how Pharaoh is going to perform out these different things the next couple episodes. Like, what else is she going to do?
I think you have to look at where Ben was before this whole story too, because we know from the podcast where he used to completely do the story up front the way Oni wanted him to.
Yeah.
And his exposure to the other colonies and his time being there almost softened him up in a way to be receptive to the hardships and the headaches that has been prevalent from the other colonies for a little while. And granted, most of his reporting was during the Covenant War, so he only had that exposure. But having those relationships built in the other colonies, he was able to relate more and was more open to the possibility. So if it was another journalist that came and did this job that wasn't Ben, we would have a completely different story as it is right now. I think that experience out there plays a big part in why the story was able to be successful.
Yeah, but it makes you wonder too, though, how much of the Outer Colony stuff would honestly change his mind if he didn't see it. Like, say, for instance, he was just going out there and he was, like, regurgitating all the stuff that Oni wanted him to do. If he didn't get those leads to certain stuff, where he would think of now of Oni. Like, the fact that there were so many things that were just made up. Like, you had people that were dead that were acting out, you know, voice actors that were for Karsh commercials or Warthog commercials, whatever you want to call them.
Right.
It was interesting. It really is. The story of Hunt the Truth in itself is just absolutely mind-blowing. Like I said before, like the amount of quality that's on this is really good too, and it really makes me wonder where this is gonna tie in Halo 5. Like, who, if we're gonna see any returning characters, maybe if we're gonna see maybe Ben, maybe as like an audio blog type thing that we kind of see, like ODST. You had this recording with Virgil and the little girl, I don't remember the governor's daughter, Sadie. Or something. I don't know. Is that what her name?
Yep. Sadie.
Her. So it'd be interesting to see if, like, they kind of implemented something like that. Like, we know where Ben is now. Like, we're seeing what he's doing to kind of mess Oni up because of all the dark, dirty stuff that they're doing. It really makes me wonder if they would be able to implement him into, like, one of those audio log type things. Because I think that'd be pretty neat, like, to see the continuation of his story where he's going.
I would agree. I think this is a good starting point for a character that we could see develop within the Halo universe. I would love to see more of Ben's past journalistic adventures, so to speak.
I'm constantly going back to the referring thing, but it makes me wonder where he's going to be. You know, he's a journalist now, but it makes me wonder what he'll be later on. Maybe he'll be an investigator for, like, a higher up investigator for whoever he's with, that we don't know who he's with right now. We just know it's Pharaoh. It makes me wonder if, like, he'll be an investigative person to kind of find out more truth. You know, maybe he'll uncover some things that'll develop into, like, maybe Halo 6 or some involvement in Halo 6. I don't know. It'd be interesting to see where they go with his character. It really will.
And one of the things that I think we could see, and I would like to see, is that inclusion into the story as it goes further down the line, because we don't know right now. We're still in the dark of whether or not the senators will make something happen, or if Ben is going to be put under the protection of whoever group Pharaoh lies under, whether it's the Outer Colonies or something else. So where does he kind of fall in after this? And I think that's where these last three episodes are going to help fill in the gaps of what's the playing field now going into Halo 5.
Right. It really makes me wonder, though, what Pharaoh, who she's with. Like, I know that's a big question. Like, that's a big question everybody's asking. But it really makes me wonder who she's with, or if she's the head of her her organization in any way. Because, like, she seems to have a lot of power. She is making things happen that no other person could really make that happen unless they have some sort of connections. You know, like, apart from hacking and computer stuff like that, that's one thing. But, like, you got to know what you're doing. And I guess it's going to be interesting to see where she's who she is.
Right. And there's been a little bit of buzz today about who Pharaoh could actually be.
There's a lot. There's a couple theories out there. There's a couple of theories.
One prevalent mostly to today, though, which I think, and we've actually had a few people already mention it in our chat, which I think might be an interesting discussion to have a little later on once we kind of get towards the end of the episode. But going back to the beginning of the podcast, when Anthony was doing his recording, Ben set him up, got him focused, made sure that everything was good to go. He was having him make sure that he wasn't moving around too much to not mess with the audio. And I'm guessing he recorded audio and video because of what he was showing off during the hack into Oni. But he got Anthony to sit down, record his name, and then just shoot off from there. He started talking about the incident during which him and his fellow ODSTs were ordered to fight John, and how there were obvious signs of this 12 to 13 year old undergoing similar genetic augmentations with scars that were prevalent in other Spartan inductees, and just went into his whole story of what happened to him, what he knew of the Spartan program, saying that everything that he was saying was of his own free will, that he wasn't under duress for saying any of it, and how they were encouraged not to talk about it whatsoever under fear of court-martial. So that was kind of the hook for the senators into everything that was going on. That was the human aspect that Pharaoh came up with the idea for in the last episode to get the senators to pay attention. And one of the things Ben noticed early on in the hack into Oni was that they were in fact listening to him whenever the hack first happened.
Yeah. Their direct attention was to him. And I mean, rightfully so. I mean, if someone's on a giant screen that is has the ability to like hack into something like that, you're going to wonder what they're going to have to say. I mean, regardless of who they are, you're going to see, especially after Anthony Petrovsky's whole interview thing, he was showing off details that, you know, he is military. He knows what's going on. And Ben's this journalist. You know, he has these ideas of what may be happening, but he's a journalist. He's going to try to show, you know, he's going to look for details that would put towards something positive or negative. Like, he kind of driven. But it was interesting to see that they bring in Anthony Petrovsky and kind of show him that. But I can imagine what was going through their heads. Yeah. A whole bunch of people just paying attention to him. I mean, I'd be in shock too. I'd honestly want to see more.
Well, he only had so much time.
Oh yeah, right, yeah.
And one of the things to that as well is whenever you're hacking into a system, you know there's going to be pushback to try to get you off that screen as much as possible, especially when you're hacking into something as big as Oni.
Oh yeah.
So of course we're gonna get a little more info into that in a second, but again, we're going to be jumping around this like crazy, so sorry if we're losing you in some parts, but if there's something that we want to talk about, then we're just going to jump around to it, but we'll hit all the bullet points in due time, so don't worry about that. One of the things that Ben was talking about whenever his recording of Anthony was going on was kind of recapping what Pharaoh had done releasing the leaks, and how there was kind of discontent and disarray between the outer colonies and inner colonies from the first leak, and then the second leak kind of solidified the fact that, yes, Chief is actually doing this, and there's things that you should be concerned about. So everyone just completely went crazy after the second leak, and that's something that just kind of pushed people over the edge. And one of the things that he mentioned was it was reopening old wounds that the Outer Colony had towards the UEG, Oni, and everyone in the inner colonies. Going back to this whole insurrectionist things that we read about in the books, this human civil war that was kind of inevitable has been curbed by the Covenant War, put on a hold, and now it's just coming back full swing thanks to what Ben has done through his podcasts and what he's about to do, doing this brief in front of all of these senators.
The Outer Colonies are definitely getting revved up. I mean, you have all that stuff that's going on too, you know, with the messages from,
right,
can't remember, from her friend or Chief's friend,
Katrina.
Katrina, there we go. I was gonna say Kat. I'm like, that's not, no. You have messages from her, and then you have Mashaak too.
Right.
Something's going on there.
It's not going on very well in the Outer Colonies.
Mm-mm. Nope.
Stuff is happening, and people are starting to get frustrated, organize, and do demonstrations, as Katrina informed Ben in a message that he received after doing his interview with Anthony. But if there's anything that you can expect out of chaos, is people are going to be organizing and trying to, at least, like, if you look at the Outer Colonies' perspective, they're going to be mounting up a resistance for what's happened before. And when they see the same issues happening again, the same things that they were worried about from the past before the Covenant showed up, of course it's going to bring up old issues and be old wounds that are going to be ripped open again. That's basically what this podcast has fueled. And what Pharaoh points out later is that what Ben has done was the spark to the blaze that is now this resurgence of the insurrectionists. And even though it's not called the insurrectionists anymore, that's the new direction, kind of reinstated direction, that the Outer Colonists are taking against the UEG.
Right. It's horrible. I mean, the Outer Colonies are always getting the shaft, it seems. Like, they're always getting the crappy end of the stick. I mean, you got all this stuff going on now. I mean, and the thing that you're going to bring up old wounds and stuff, that's kind of, like, I know that's the purpose of it, but that's really going to trigger a lot of people to do some really bad stuff. I mean, when you're getting organized, you're looking to attack, and not looking good.
Branching off of what you said about Katrina, though, we do have a message from her, like you said, and one of the things that she was talking about was how people were acting like it was 15 years ago before the Covenant showed up, using local chatternet, or organizing demonstrations, and having people starting this new organization called the Colonial Alliance Group. So things are happening in the other colonies, and it's something that is a little scary for her. While things haven't really quite escalated and things still seem peaceful, is something that she's wary about, and she doesn't feel safe.
At that point, you're kind of wondering where it's going to take off from. You know, you have all these, you're bringing back old ways of doing things before the Covenant War. Is this going to lead to another war, but with humans? You know, like, are we going to go back to the old way of doing things? You know, we were in a war for human survival, for the human race, and now we're going to completely destroy each other, if that is the case of what's going to happen, just because of one organization being the way they are. It's going to inflame more trouble than they ever thought they would ever think of.
Right. The whole suppression that they were putting on the Outer Colonies before, having the Spartan program be one of those measures against it, is now rearing its head in full force. And the Spartans are no longer reliable because of what Chief has done. It's getting the inner colonies to question the Spartans, their reliability, the fact that they can actually keep Earth and the inner colonies safe. And then it's outraging the outer colonies because of what they've learned now, that Oni took kids from them to turn right back around and put them down.
Right. Stability, and this is not looking good. I mean, you have people that were out there to protect human or, you know, civilians or whatever you want to call them, then you don't have that now. You know, I mean, especially in the outer colonies, there's nothing containing the rage at all. You know, there's not there. You're not going to be able to stop that many people from doing harm. And especially like it's basically rioting. You know, you have all this stuff going on in the outer colonies, but you also got to look at it like this, too. It merely makes you wonder what's going to be happening in the inner colonies as well. You know, when people start finding out these things, I mean, granted, there's nothing happening right now, but the way things are going, it's everywhere. Everybody's going to be after everybody at that point.
Right. And they're going to question, what is the government doing to keep them safe? And when the government can't keep them safe because their beloved Spartans are no longer mentally stable to keep them safe, they feel vulnerable. So they're going to be turning on their government.
Oh, yeah. Civil war is definitely going to be happening. That's without a doubt. I mean,
yep.
Between civil war and stuff like that, it really makes you wonder, though, because we have the Spartan 4 program. You know, we have all them. It makes me wonder what they're going to be doing. You know, you have the UNSC that's going to be taking orders, and especially the way Oni is right now, the fact that they're going through all this stuff's kind of leaking out on them. It makes you wonder what's the UNSC going to do, because they kind of take their orders from them in a way. Like, UNSC is on the bottom, so to speak, and then you have the other high-ranking stuff on top. And if they're falling apart, what are they going to do? You know, that's kind of where things are going to be going, and it's looking bad. It makes me wonder what Chief's doing. You know, I wonder if, like, we have all this stuff going on with Pharaoh, leaking all this stuff. It honestly makes me wonder if there's any connection between the two at all. You know, Pharaoh's leaking all this information from Ben and all this stuff. It makes me wonder if she's sending Chief in to do all this stuff to make it look even worse.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? To have that driven, maybe Pharaoh has basically opened up this deal, showing some stuff that Chief didn't necessarily want to see. Kind of showing maybe it was a fake idea of them doing different. I don't know. Like there's a million different things that could be happening right now. But it is interesting to see where Chief's going to be with this. And I honestly feel that there is a link between the two. I don't know how big that link is, but I know there's something going on.
So I think the big part of it is not going to be seen until Halo 5.
I guarantee you in the next 3 episodes, and especially with E3 rolling around, I guarantee you that last link, that link between the two stories and that link between Halo 5 and Hunt the Truth, it's going to be big. You're going to see it explode maybe at E3, kind of showing off, you know, why they're doing this whole Hunt the Truth podcast to show us, you know, what's really happening with, like, the backstory, which they're doing a great job of. But then when E3 rolls around, you're going to see it firsthand from the two sides that are fighting with each other. You know, you have Chief's side and then you have Locke's side, which is it's looking like an all-out war.
It is.
And then you got to look at it like this, too. I mean, we're seeing signs of Covenant, you know, between the Spartan, the Locke trailer. You know, I don't know how much relevant that is to Halo 5, but people are saying that maybe St. Helios. And if that is, it makes you wonder why there's fighting going on with elites and stuff like that on St. Helios. You know what I mean? Like, so there's chaos everywhere you're looking in Halo 5. There really is. Well, at least what we've seen so far.
So one of the interesting associations that I just kind of made in my head is that you're seeing kind of a civil war in between groups of Spartans that kind of coincides with the civil war that's going on between the inner and outer colonies, because you have Locke's team, which is working for Oni, and then you have Blue Team, which is the original Spartan 2s, and we still have a lot to learn behind the story of what's going on. Is Halsey a part of it? Is it something related to the Forerunners and the Mantle, or is this some completely other agenda that's going on? Because there's a lot of mystery behind what Chief's objective is right now, based on what we've seen in The Hunt of Truth, versus what we've seen in the comics, versus what we've seen in the few trailers that we've seen. So there's lots of missing pieces behind what Chief's purpose is. And I don't really think the Chief has gone mentally unstable or rogue at this point. There's always been the purpose behind what Chief has done. And I don't think that was really made more clear than in Halo 4, when he was taking over those major decision roles when Cortana was losing it.
maybe we're not looking at him as mentally unstable or rogue in that sense. Like, when you say that, you're looking at it, oh, well, Chief isn't in the right state of mind. Maybe the rogue and the mental dysfunction or whatever that you're thinking of is because he is in that state of mind, well, I'm going to do what I want to do, and maybe there is some foul play playing at hand. You know, maybe there's someone, you know, that we haven't seen yet. You know, maybe Pharaoh, like I said before, maybe is guiding him that's going against him, but showing him false deals, you know, maybe showing him that, you know, this isn't what we're doing. I don't necessarily think Chief has gone rogue in the sense of that he's doing it just because he wants to do it. I think there's a motivation from someone else that's showing him that. Like, he's not going to sit there and completely make these decisions on his own. I mean, you can, like, granted, we were seeing that in Halo 4 when Cortana was really kind of just going nuts. But he's always been the person to take orders. He's never defied orders. I mean, the only time we've ever seen that and where that kind of began when he told Del Rio he's not taking Cortana. He basically flat out told him no. And was going to fight off the Didact, and that's where the Halo 4 storyline was going with that.
Mm-hmm.
But we never seen that side of Chief of where, well, this is wrong. I'm going to do what I'm going to do for the good. You know, he's making, like we said before, when Mendez was saying that he can make drastic mind decisions in seconds where other people can't. So it's really going to be interesting to see what decisions he is making and the reason why he is going with this. I mean, the fact that we don't know how Blue Team is incorporated with Halo 5. We know that they're in there. We know that they're characters in the game. But it just makes me wonder if he went after them or they came willingly. You know what I mean? Like, maybe they went after to find Chief himself, or maybe he, you know, well, I need to find a team that's, you know, stable, people that know, people that I can honestly rely on. You know, might as well go back to the roots, people that I've dealt with before, and we understand how we work. We understand how. We know each other's voices. We know each other's moves. I mean, granted, it's been a while since they did it, but they understand what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be interesting to see where that story takes place. I mean, we know Locke and his team, whatever his team's name or whatever they are, we know they're going after him. You know, we know Oni's sending their dogs out to hunt down whatever it is that they're going to be doing. And there's a major conflict. And it's going to be huge to find out what that conflict is.
Yeah, and they're gonna go to the lengths to make sure that, I mean, what we've seen from the Hunt the Signal stuff is they're looking at vulnerabilities in the armor to stop Chief. So they're taking any possible thing that they can do to stop him.
Yeah, and we've said this several times on the podcast, but we don't know what the librarian did either.
Right.
We don't know if maybe she's having some sort of influence either. You know, we don't know. We don't know anything. I mean, the only thing we know is at this point in time, he's looking like the enemy, which I guarantee he's not. You know, people are going to be covering that up completely and making it look like everything. I mean, that's how things work. But the enemy is always going to show the true side of things. And it's always been like that. Even in movies, like, they've always had that motivation to do something. Let it be revenge. Let it be anything, money, greed, like, it, I mean, I know that's not what Chief's doing. Like, that's just simple. I'm just saying that, like, there is that motivation in there, and it's going to be interesting to see. Like, a lot of people are saying that he's looking for Cortana. He's not going to be shooting up everybody to find an AI.
No.
I'm sorry. That's not what's happening here. There's a much bigger story in this, and, like, one of the ideas is that Pharaoh, and this is just an idea, but Pharaoh is Cortana. Now, if that is the case, and I'm not saying it is. I mean, like I said, this is just wild speculation that we don't know anything just yet. But this is one of the ideas that I found extremely interesting is if this is Cortana, it'd be interesting to see how like what's going on with that. Like, why would Cortana have that motivation to take out Oni? You know, it's now, like I said, that's wild conspiracies. Like, that's going out there. You know, everybody thought at first it was Halsey, you know, which, she probably has her own thing that she's doing. I mean, she has the Janus key and all that. So it's going to be interesting to see if they unveil who Pharaoh really is in this.
And we'll get to that, the newest theory later of what's going on. Mm-hmm. And it actually comes from Halo Archive, and they know their stuff. So,
oh, yeah, absolutely.
I'm not too worried about trusting them that this could be a possible revelation here or discovery, but we'll get to that in a little bit. Going back to where we were in the podcast, Katrina voiced her concern about her safety with, while everything was still peaceful, she feels like she's being targeted for talking to Ben and helping him with his story that he's been putting together. So he said, or she said, just shortly after she talked with him, that her whole neighborhood lost power and she was hit with a wave of corrupt files on her computer. And since then, everywhere, it's just been random power surges, the system malfunctions, everything. Whether or not this is specifically isolated to her, or if this is just one of those occurrences that Mashaq was talking about before, it's hard to say. But needless to say, she doesn't feel very safe, and she thinks that with the potential of things going to blow up with how people are reacting, that it would be good for her to get off world and get somewhere where it's safer.
Yeah, that would be her best bet. I mean, it's going to be hard, though, especially mm-hmm. as chaotic things are, because I'm sure flights out of there, or space flights, or whatever it is that they're going to be using to get off world, that's going to be extremely hard. And I'm sure that it's not just her thinking that either. There's going to be a lot of families out there that don't want their kids seeing what's going to about to blow up. That's going to be out there trying to do it too. You know, that's just, it's going to be nuts. And I don't necessarily think that there's going to be casualties in the way of shooting down stuff, but it's possible. Like, it's a dangerous situation. In my personal opinion, when I started seeing things go crazy, like in the early stages, I would have been gone. Like, there would be no second guessing. Oh, well, something's going up. Yep, I'm done. I'm gone. I'm leaving. Especially with all the stuff going on with Chief, and then all the stuff with the podcast and stuff like that. That would raise a lot of red flags.
You would think.
Some people are hard-headed, though. A lot of people think that, well, this is a story just to get, just for attention. You know, that there's probably something behind this to, you know, not necessarily marketing, but like to kind of point in the direction of something that is basically fake. Chief going out there saying, doing all this crazy stuff, could be a cover up for someone trying to do something worse than what's really happening. You know, there's a lot of thinkers out there, and I'm probably one of them, that overthinks things a lot, but there's a lot of people out there that don't believe it. You know, it's just a conspiracy theory. You know, this isn't real. You know, why would someone that we've trusted and someone that's been a loyal soldier protecting everybody all of a sudden do this? Like, it doesn't add up. Like, there's not enough evidence to point at this. Yeah, sure, he was all of a sudden he was shooting up things, but that could be faked. You know, someone could easily make armor that is very, very, you know, convincing. You know, there was no sort of way of saying, oh, well, you know, yeah, sure, that was Chief. Someone could fake that, especially how smart people are with technology, Photoshop and things like that. So, I mean, granted, we were getting confirmation that it was him, but a lot of people were thinking, well, this isn't real.
Well, from what it sounds like, though, a lot of people did believe it was real in the story.
Right. Right. No, and I mean, that's what I'm saying, though. But in the inner colonies, like in the outer colonies, people are more level-headed. You know, mm-hmm. they understand war, they understand conflict, they understand they've been through it more than what the inner colonies have. I mean, when glassing was going on, they were kind of in there too, but like, they're the people that understand what's going on. The inner colonies, they're kind of the higher ups, you know, they're kind of more, oh, well, you know, people will help us, you know, so like things like that. Not necessarily saying they're bad, but like they're not on the same level as the outer colonies are. They haven't experienced that level of intense fighting or constant battle.
And you made a good point about how the outer colonies are used to the fighting. And that's one of the reasons I think the outer colonies realize that Oni is more of a problem than the Chief is. And something that Pharaoh mentioned earlier on in the last episode was that the real heroes, the real veterans, know that Chief is a hero. They know that he's out there for the sake of humanity.
Yeah.
And this is either him just breaking under the pressure of what happened to him as a child, or this could be something else. And I think for us, we believe that it's just something else. But without knowing what his mission is, you really aren't in a position to know that.
No. The wild theory was, like, when we first started seeing, and I'm going back, and I'm sorry for the tangents, but like when we first started seeing the first images that we've seen of Halo 5, Locke was on top, Chief was on bottom. You know, there's Locke was always pointed out as the single, you know, concentrated on individual in that photo. Like, he was always there, you know. And then the other theories were, well, Chief's gone rogue to go for Cortana. Now, there's a couple of reasons why he would. You know, the UNSC doesn't want him doing that. But as of right now, there's no reasoning for it. And I think there's a possibility she's still out there. I don't think she's gone. We may see her in a new way that we didn't think she would come back in, you know. And there's a lot of wild theories, but I don't think Chief's breaking. He's been through more chaotic incidents. Like, I mean, he took a nuke or whatever you want to call it, Covenant bomb, threw it on their ship. You know, he's been through more than anybody's ever been through, I can honestly say.
Right.
That toll, I don't think, is ever going to take an effect. He's just a hard-blooded individual. Like, he's driven to keep going and doing. Like, I don't think that mental breakdown is going to happen to him.
So, I think I don't know if we're going to see, like, a full mental breakdown, but one of the things that got brought up in Halo 4 was his humanity. And we see that through the training of the Spartan program, and it's been prevalent in Hunt the Truth, and we've seen it in the books. The kids have been trained to be machines, basically. So all that emotion has been trained out of them, and they think logically. And that's one of the reasons why I think Mendez said that Chief could make decisions that would take other tactical leaders years to think of in split seconds, is because they're trained to not even think about the emotional implications of it and just think logically, okay, weigh the costs and benefits here and then execute.
Yeah. I mean, the only emotional side that we've seen so far is Cortana, him in that relationship with Cortana. That's the only thing we've seen so far. You know, he wasn't thinking there was no remorse of killing elites. You know, there was no remorse of anything. We haven't seen any sort of passion with Chief at all. You know, that there was nothing in there. I mean, there was a couple incidences, but like, there was nothing really hard. You know, like you said before, that was trained out of them. Like, they weren't going to sit there and like, oh, well, humans are dying. Oh, well, his family is everything. Like, that's no. You don't, like, they're basically there to get the job done regardless of the outcome is. If it's done and it countlessly saved millions of lives, yeah, sure, people died. Great, that's fine. But you got to look at the outcome of it's done for a reason. That's how they're looking at it. Their objective comes first.
One of the things with Halo 4, though, is we discover through Cortana that Chief hasn't explored those emotional side of things. And that's one of the things that I think is shown in that last cutscene, or those last two cutscenes, the one with Lasky, where it was talking about who's the human and who's the machine.
Yeah. Cortana's an AI, and she had more feelings than Chief ever did.
Right.
You know, like, especially through, I mean, like, granted, in Halo 3, she wasn't there, but, like, in Halo 4, she was really, I mean, that could be her going through her rampancy. You know, that's probably the reason why, but, like, there was a lot of emotional stuff in there, like, the reasons why that son was fake and the things like that, like, just more heavy emotional stuff that was driven in with her, which, in my opinion, I think she was more human than Chief ever would
be. I would agree. And one of the things I can attribute to that, too, is possibly her interaction with the Gravemind after Halo 2. There's a story in Halo Evolutions where it actually goes through her interaction with the Gravemind up to the point where we meet her back in Halo 3. So we actually have a full story that fills in what happened to Cortana between when we leave her in Halo 2 and Halo 3. And I highly suggest everyone go read it if you get the chance to. I forget which short story it's called. If someone in the chat could throw it up there for me. But that is something where you have something that's as powerful as the Gravemind altering your way of thinking. And he affects things on a digital level, on a physical level, on a metaphysical level with space-time. It's, thank you, Pens, Human Weakness. Great story. I would definitely recommend reading it. I feel that there's a lot of carryover there with how the Gravemind influences her and shows her certain aspects that were stripped away from her that her creators took away for her to serve a certain function. And I think emotions was probably one of those things that kind of got reintroduced into her, which also might be a saving grace of to why she could still possibly be around and maybe even survive rampancy. It's a wild shot theory. I understand that, but
no, I mean, anything's possible. Another thing that a lot of people were saying too is that she was there's a lot of stuff that's been said about this, but she was a clone from Dr. Halsey's brain. Mm-hmm. Some things in there, like granted, she's still an AI, but there is an idea that some of that stuff that was from her kind of made more emotional understanding. You know, because she is that clone from Dr. Halsey's brain. Like, she could understand things more than other AIs could. That was another theory that I honestly felt was pretty interesting, in my opinion. Like, the fact that she was able to understand it more than others. Because there was a lot of others that did try to, from what I've understood, they tried to understand it, and they kind of went crazy.
Right.
So to speak, and they didn't understand it.
So but one of the things from Halo 4 is that the librarian specifically planned that Chief would be who he is and Cortana would exist the way she is.
Right.
And that's the reason why I feel Cortana is not gone. And a lot of people I know talking to would really think that bringing back Cortana in any fashion would be disrespectful to her. But if you look at the story, the way that Halo 4 was portrayed, there is no solid reason why, for absolute certainty, for you to believe that Cortana is gone.
No, and there's people out there that don't want her gone because of who she was as a character. She was the other half of the experience that you got with, you know, Halo. You know, you had Chief that was basically monotone most of the time. You're shooting. You're his underneath that mask, and you're getting the Cortana talking to you. Like, that was the experience. And there's a lot of people that were really disappointed that she was gone. The one thing that I honestly felt in Halo 4 that Halo 3 and Halo 2 and the others didn't have was that emotional side.
Mm-hmm.
Even though she was going nuts, even though she was going AWOL and she didn't really have that her being stable at all, like she was understanding stuff a little bit more too. Like, she may have been gone crazy, she was going nuts, but she was understanding more things than she did when she was, you know, in her prime, you know, when she wasn't going through rampancy.
That's enough about Cortana, though. We need to get back to Hunt the Truth. Sorry, massive tangent. it happens.
Yeah, I mean, there wouldn't be a podcast without tangents.
Right.
If you constantly kept on the right thing. I mean, everything leads into the other stuff, but it's juicy details that people cling on to, though.
So one of the things during Katrina's call or the message with Ben is she asked if Ben really knew what was going on, and he said he really didn't, because it was something that when he went to his new place to set up shop, he didn't securely set up his comms, so he was kind of afraid to check out anything that was going on for fear that Oni would be able to track him down. So he hadn't really heard anything. He expected that it would be a pretty big impact for his latest episode, but from how Katrina sounded and what she was asking about, it seemed to indicate that the story hit a lot bigger than he anticipated. At the end of the message, though, she basically gets cut off. As she's saying that they were shutting down the streets. Lots of stuff that's hectic. Of course, networks are flooded and they're unstable, so everything's going crazy right now. And all he could do was just kind of wait there and hope Mashok would get to him, and eventually he did. And Mashok called in, finally got the information, the last bit that Ben was waiting for to put his story together. And he also came with a little bonus as well. One of the things that Mashok was working on was the story that he came up with last time, where the thing that he was investigating were the selection of kids in the other colonies wasn't random. He was trying to pull that together from a bunch of conspiracy theories that were flying around there and make it presentable in such a way that was formal enough for senators to understand and accept as somewhat valid proof, if that makes any sense. Making sure that the senators would actually believe in what was in the documentation. putting it in a way that they'd be able to act on it. So he did that, and then he dove more into one of the cases where a Spartan, or one of the kids abducted for the Spartan program, met his clone. Yes. So we have a police scanner report that Mashaq was able to clean up and dig through. He explains that there was a call to a break-in at a house, and when the police officer got there, everyone was fine. They consoled the family that was there, which was a teenage kid in a wheelchair and his parents, and it didn't seem like anything was broken or anything stolen. There wasn't any kind of showdown or anything. Like, no one was hurt, no one was attacked. It's just this person came in, broke into the house, and then left for some reason, which is all fine. So as the officers are writing down the report for what happened, where this person just broke in, went into the son's room, and then just ran out the door, the officers hear a gunshot nearby. So the officer calls for backup. Backup arrives, and they go investigate the sound. And they find a teen lying in the grass that took a self-inflicting shot that eventually killed him. So the weird thing is that the officer that called in reported that the kid that shot himself looked exactly the same as the kid that was in the wheelchair.
Yeah, they said it could pass as his twin. Every feature on him was exact same.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, man, I've thought about that. I guess one thing that's been sticking with me a lot you had two of the same individuals, and I was still thinking, it's like, how would you tackle that? Like it's a really bad situation.
Mm-hmm. You can't really comprehend that because, A, we don't have that capabilities now. And
no,
I think it would be an egregious violation of human rights. Just like Ben states in his report to the senators, of even thinking about doing something like that.
It's inhumane.
Exactly.
It's inhumane in a big, big ways. I mean, you have the amount, you would have people flipping out. Like, if you found out that someone that was in your family or anybody that you knew was stolen, remade, and then put the clone in your house, like someone that you didn't, basically was just a reproduction or a redone deal, people would freak out. There would not be one thought process of, oh, well, there's probably a reason for it. They would want immediate answers. And if they didn't get it and they were saying, oh, well, this is all fake, people would freak out. There'd be riots. They would, like, it'd be unstable as everything is going right now. It's just crazy.
Well, and for both the family and like the original kid, as far as they know, they're the only copy of themselves. And as far as official records are concerned, for police reports or whatever, there's only one of that kid. There's not going to be two of that kid. So once they find that, it's rather odd, because for the kid that got abducted and went through the Spartan program, to see that there's someone else exactly like him who was living his life, that he was replaced, you're going to go through an emotional breakdown, I think.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the other thing, too, is that they're going to do DNA tests. They're going to do, if this self-inflicted wound, you know, brought disfiguration, you know, ways that you can't identify the individual apart from, you know, just certain, you know, birthmarks or freckles or different things like that. They're going to do DNA tests. You know, they're going to do tests of all sorts to prove or to see who this person was. Yeah, sure, he may have the exact same features as the other person, but they're going to try to figure out, this is official stuff. When official gets involved with it, it's no longer fake. Like, this is real. Like, you're going to have something like that break on news stories. The police reports don't lie. That's why they're police reports.
Even if they're suppressed by ONI, they're still police reports.
Yeah.
So one of the things in addition that Mashaq pulled up as well was the medical records for this kid. And from what we know of the kid in the wheelchair, he had autoimmune and severe cognitive diseases, but similar treatments to that were given to John's clone. So pulling up John's medical records before he died, same treatments. John's clone obviously didn't live, but this clone survived with major nerve damage. The imperfection of this clone was something even more egregious, that this clone was having to live a, a life that's just full of problems and issues. And it's a human being that has to go through that. That's been grown in the lab and is now living this life that, one, wasn't really theirs, but two, it's miserable because they're stuck in a wheelchair for their whole life.
It's horrible. Anybody should never, no one should have to go through that. I mean, you have people today that have to go through, they have spine problems, they have things that cripple them, you know, at a young age. Anyone that goes through that will know exactly what that is. But the fact that this is a clone and it's not supposed to have that many defects, and it has, it makes you wonder too, how fast did those sicknesses or whatever was wrong with them, like how fast did that take effect? You know, was it all of a sudden, or like was it over time? You know, the memories the clone has is he was fine. There was nothing wrong with him, you know, and all of a sudden he gets sick and he ends up in a wheelchair. Like that's crazy. Like it's just drastically bad. Like that, it's just bad.
So Mashok's going through this whole thing, and after going through all the data, especially the new finding that he had now with the police report, Ben decided not to use it just because he didn't have enough time to fully grasp the depth of the story and to integrate it in with what he had. But it gave him more motivation to actually break open the story about Oni to the senator. So that's something that kind of went in his favor. Mashok was consoling him because, of course, Ben is nervous. Ben is anxious. Mashok's like, you're going to do a great job, and I'm going to be here watching and waiting for the ripples to collide. Before his call ends, he is asking Ben to kind of go back or get back with him, because he needs to catch him up to speed with what's going on because of the podcast that just happened and some other major things that are happening. And Pharaoh decides to just cut in, hack into the call. And she says, Ben will call you back. I've got more important things to attend to.
Pharaoh's awesome. The fact that she just goes in and just cuts him off. You're done. Goodbye. And just cuts him off there.
Yeah.
That was probably one of the humorous parts of this podcast. There wasn't too many of them this time around.
Right. It's so in the fashion of Pharaoh too, because you have Ben who hacked into, or sorry, you had Mashok who hacked into Ben's stuff a while ago. And then you have Pharaoh who is about to perform the biggest hack probably in human history into Oni. It's just eavesdropping into that conversation. It's like, hey Mashok, yeah, it's time for us to go. You need to get off. Bye. See you later.
Yep. Later.
He'll call you back, as she said it. So, showtime. The big money. Right here and then. Pharaoh interrupted the call. Basically asked Ben if he was ready to go. And he said, yeah, he had to be. This was it. This was the point. This was the time for him to present all of his evidence before the senators about what Oni has done to the kids that Oni had abducted and trained for Spartans, and all the egregious actions that they took against the outer colonies, putting all of his journalistic integrity on the line for this heavily biased opinion of what Oni has done against humanity and the outer colonies and everything else, laying it all out on the table and getting ready to make this big presentation in the most powerful people in the galaxy. That's got to be nerve-wracking.
Oh, man. It's one of those things, though, where you could overcome that, saying that they're seeing you, but they're not. It's just a screen. You know, you're not. It's, my friend was talking about this, but you're not actually in front of them. I mean, granted, you're talking, like you said, probably one of the most powerful people in the world and presenting them with this evidence to take down one of the most powerful organizations in the world. that I wouldn't know what to do with myself at that point. I wouldn't be able to do it. There's no way.
He had the cojones to do it.
Yep.
This was his time, and he'd been really looking forward to this. This was a big break for him. He was going to blow the story open, and everything that he'd seen up to this point was enough to convince him that, yes, this is the thing that I want to do, that I'm willing to do, that it's time to put a foot down on everything that Oni has done. And he's committed to this now. So Pharaoh hacks in. Immediately, Ben sees on his data pad a room filled with senators, Oni directors, and someone out of the corner of his eye just before Pharaoh says that his feed went live was Michael Sullivan. So amongst all of these 12 UEG senators, 3 Oni directors, Sullivan was in the room as well. After the countdown, after Pharaoh said that you're live, Ben froze for a second and then started his presentation.
And that's where things began to get intense. Yeah, so the fact Sully was in there just was crazy. Like, the person that was basically trying to help him in a way by getting him on that, well, wasn't really him, but he had that flight and all that stuff and was really, no, not necessarily trying to get him these interviews and things like that. Like, there was always a side of Michael that was different. You know, like, he was an Oni, but there was always a reason that he was always acting fake, it seemed. Like, we've seen that when he goes, no, you're going to get on this plane, you're going to go. And he goes, that was the first time he actually felt like he was talking to him. And the fact that he was in there kind of went and was told him, oh, well, the message is, I'm jumping ahead, but you're done. That was kind of crazy for it coming from him.
And for the next, I guess, pretty much 5 to 7 minutes, he laid it all out there. He started out by saying he was originally hired by Michael Sullivan to do this profile on the Master Chief. And as he kept digging and found the origins of the Master Chief, all the cover-ups that Oni had done, that Oni terminated his contract, and that he had been threatened to not release it, all that kind of stuff. He mentioned that he was distracted by the feed, and strangely enough, it went down. But before that, he noticed that all the senators were actually paying attention to him, actually listening to him. So that gave him a little more encouragement to keep going. Pharaoh was like, I had to cut the feed, but you're still up. They can still see you. Keep going. So Ben continues to tell all the senators that Oni had kept critical information from them regarding the Spartan program, how they inducted children into the Spartan program by kidnapping them and replacing them with genetic copies, and then doing a bunch of genetic augmentations on them to create the Spartans and all the training that they went through. Then he presented the recording that he did with Anthony Petrovsky just a few hours beforehand.
A lot of information in that short amount of time.
Yeah. During the Anthony Petrovsky recording, he was contacted by Sully on his, I guess, his data pad or whatever. He said, Sully told him that you're out of control. You need to stop this. Ben replied to him that he would no longer be associated with the crimes that Oni had committed and that he was done. And then Sully has a cold reply of, yes, you are. That's absolutely chilling.
Well, you're basically telling dude, you're screwed. You're done. You're like, there's nothing you're going to be, you're not going to be telling anybody anymore. Like, when basically Oni tells you you're done with something, that's not good. That's not good at all.
Nope. At the end of Anthony's little segment, Ben comes back on and he has the floor for about another minute and a half. As Anthony's piece was wrapping up, Pharaoh said that the hack was being hit hard and that he wouldn't have much time. So Ben was going through his final script and cutting out verbiage that he didn't feel was necessary anymore. And finally, when his time came, he delivered his message, going through how Oni had kidnapped kids, illegally engineered the clones that were doomed to die, kept the kids as military property, going through all the augmentations that they had them go through, and asking the senators to review all the information that corroborates his claims of what Oni has done and what Oni has gone through to cover up what's happened in the program, and also the threats that he's received as he's done his investigation. And just as he wraps up his little speech at the very end, the signal dies. The hack is gone.
Perfect timing.
Yeah.
Kind of eerie perfect timing at that.
I know, right? And that, according to Pharaoh, was the start of the blaze, the revolution. He planted the spark with his podcast, and now people are going to be up in arms.
Man, this podcast really hit it. I think the next I'm anxious for the next one. Like I want to see how the first one starts out. Is what I'm looking forward to the most, because each one of them's always had that intro, kind of showing like what the left one, like the events or the effects of the last one left off of.
Right.
This one is gonna make me wonder. Like, is it gonna be a new story? Like, what's gonna happen? Like, these are huge people that shouldn't have never even seen that, and they're seeing that. So
it's crazy, man.
That's crazy. I can't imagine being in that situation man's in right now. I really couldn't.
I'd be scared out of my mind.
Yeah.
That's basically the equivalent of saying or presenting before the United Nations that the NSA has done something horrible and having evidence to prove it.
Yeah, pretty much. You gotta...
Kind of like Edward Snowden.
Yeah.
Yeah. Come to think about it.
Yeah. I would never want to be in that situation ever. Unless it affected me in ways like that helped with my family or things like that, there's no way I would ever want to be caught up in something like that. I really wouldn't.
Crazy stuff. Pharaoh had the last few moments with Ben, saying that he was now under their protection, whatever their protection is, and then dropped. Ben was on his own. Everything that he had just gone through, his mind was swimming. He was felt like he was in a dream, and he couldn't help but just look down at his data pad and see the last message that Sully sent over. Yes, you are. You are done.
And that was going to stick too, because those are actual words. Everything that he just witnessed was verbal, and he can kind of forget about it really easy,
mm-hmm.
in a way. I mean, granted, that's not the case, but you can kind of forget. The one thing that's going to stick with him the most is those actual words that he's seeing over and over and over again.
Yeah.
That's got to be... My mind would be shot. I would have a nervous breakdown.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have even responded to Sully in the first place. I would have just ignored it.
Yeah.
That's absolute. That was live feedback while he was in there presenting his case.
Yeah, there was no delay either. I mean, that was pretty much right there and then.
And all the network congestion that was happening, Sully didn't have a problem getting a hold of Ben.
Right.
A little suspicious.
Yeah.
Just a little bit. One of the first things that Ben heard or saw a ripple of the effect was all of his bank accounts locked down or frozen or completely cleared out. And that happened almost instantaneously. When he called his bank representative, he found that he was under investigation for unauthorized possession of sensitive government materials, which was basically the interviews that he had done. And he was fined a ridiculous sum of credits for the allegations, which caused his accounts to be frozen or locked out.
That's got to be a nerve-wracking feeling. The fact that all your money is gone and you're also getting charged with a fine that is absurd, like insane. It just makes me wonder how much money he'll be getting from all of that.
Well, as long as he's being taken care of by whoever Pharaoh's organization is, then he should be well off on his own, even without all that money.
Yeah.
He says after the fact that one of the first things he should have even done before taking on Oni was to cash out, which was an amateur mistake.
Yeah.
So now he's in financial ruin.
Like you said, though, going back, like, he may be in financial ruin as of right now, as he's seeing it, but there's no telling what Pharaoh has in store for him.
Right.
She may have plans for him that we're not even thinking of at the moment.
Probably
so. Or what he's even thinking.
You're probably right. After getting the notification that his bank accounts were frozen or cleared out, he received two delayed messages. The first of which was from Mashaq following up on when Pharaoh interrupted them going into the hack for Oni. He said that things were getting really hectic out there, that he needed to talk to Ben, but that he didn't feel safe doing it over comm. So he was going to come meet Ben in person in 2 days. Something that he discovered that was something very unsettling, especially if he couldn't discuss it over comms. Mashaq told him not to try to reach out to him, to not talk to anybody, but just to stay there until he got there. And against his better judgment and against Mashaq's request, Ben tried to reach out to him, but noticed that it didn't even seem like his calls were going through at all. And there had been network issues since when the podcast first came out and the leaks hit. So that was obviously something that had been common. Also dropped calls, but this was something completely different to Ben. It's like his call wasn't going through. He checked his Chatternet feed and there were comments of others not being able to reach the outer colonies, getting same kind of issues that Ben was having, and scattered reports that the communication buoys between the inner and outer colonies had just been shut down in some cases. A second delayed message came in that was from Katrina, and she seemed very, very disconcerted. Like, stuff was happening, and she was scared for her life. She said that Waypoint was totally gone. They were completely isolated. Her parents and Ellie weren't on the system, and it seemed like Chatternet was down. People were fully coordinating something. The audio cuts out every now and then, so we didn't get a chance to hear what was going on fully. She was asking Ben if there was any way that he could tell her what was going on, or try to send help or send food or anything. And then silence. The message died. From then on, communication to the outer colonies just didn't happen. They were completely cut off.
They're done. And he makes you wonder who's causing that. Like, what's causing that? Like, is it Oni? You know, making sure that no one gets out, and because for whatever reason, especially with everybody freaking out the way they are, it's nerve wracking. That's a nerve wracking situation. I mean, like, that's like just you being on the other country and then America being completely cut off from the world. Like, that's a really horrible feeling.
Yeah, I mean, look at North Korea.
Yeah, true.
Look at the kind of government control they have over what's displayed on TV, what comes in for internet and all that stuff.
Yeah. Well, what little they do have.
Right.
It's all, that's a bad deal. I think the most nerve-wracking thing out of that at all was Mashaq not even getting any response. I mean, granted, we've seen this before, but like, this was, there's nothing.
Yeah. Nothing from Mashaq. And Ben said that all he could do was wait for that 48 hours. But that message was the last time that he would ever hear from Mashaq Moradi.
That sucks. I like Mashaq as a character.
I do too. That was one of those, like, you're really killing off that character.
Sadly, I mean. But the other thing is, too, it makes you wonder, is, and this is a thought that popped in my head when I was listening to it too. Was Mashaq gone by who we think it is? Or is it someone that we're least expecting? You know, maybe Pharaoh had something to do with that. Maybe she doesn't want him having connections. She used Mashaq, or Mashaq was in there for the time that she could have used him for. And then when that basically got out, she doesn't have any need for him anymore. Or Ben doesn't have any use for him anymore.
I don't know. I hope we hear some semblance of what happens to Mashaq in these next episodes, but I just don't know. there's so many possibilities, it's hard to even begin to nail one down.
Yeah.
That last line of him saying that was the last that he would ever hear from Mashaq again, that hit me more than the yes, you are line.
Oh, yeah, because Mashaq was helping. He was there. He was a character in his own that really you kind of got attached to because he was funny. I like Mashaq. He was really funny, a unique character. He wasn't out trying to screw Ben over in any way. He was actually out there assisting with everything.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of sucked kind of hearing that line.
And that's the end of the episode.
Pretty intense episode. I think probably the most intense episode we've seen yet. I mean, the one beforehand was pretty nuts, but I think this one's kind of taken a cake on that.
I think the one beforehand was more how much content and how much we learned about what's going on, and then just the intensity level on this one, because it was all the heat of the moment type stuff where this is the moment of truth. This is everything that your work has been culminating to. This is the climax of this story.
And now that that's reached, it really makes me wonder what they're going to do next. Like that peak of intensity, just going straight up, 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 and up. And it's like, you got to that moment. It's like, is it going to go up even more? Or is it just going to go down? Like, what's next? Like, it really makes you wonder.
It's the whatever the response is going to be, how the senators are going to react, if anything changes within the Earth government, if the senators even have that kind of power, if Oni is going to power or steamroll through them and try to keep doing what they're doing. I mean, it's a lot of damage control, but it's Oni.
Yep.
There's a lot of questions, and unfortunately, I just don't think we're going to find any of them out until next week.
Yeah. We may not even find a lot of those questions out next week at all. Like, we may not even find out the answers to a couple of them.
It's one giant mystery right now.
Oh, absolutely.
So, the one thing I wanted to bring up earlier that I mentioned a couple times was the latest theory in a sense of who Pharaoh could be. This comes over from, it's shown up from a few different places, but Halo Archive made a post about it saying that this could possibly be one of the original Spartan 4 inductees, Elisa Zane, and she was someone that was in Escalation issue number 2, I think is what they said.
Yeah, I think so.
She's now part of a group called the New Colonial Alliance, part of the insurrectionist group now. And again, I need to kind of catch up on Escalation. There's a quite hefty write-up of the reasons of why Pharaoh could be this person over at Halo Archive. So I would suggest going over there and taking a look at it, because I think it makes more sense than Cortana or Halsey, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah.
And to know some or that much about the Spartan program and about Oni, it would take someone that had been in Oni and possibly had gone through the Spartan program before.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing that was kind of conflicting with me about it being Cortana, she doesn't have reasoning for taking out Oni the way and aggressively like Pharaoh was doing. Like, that's the only reason why I was really saying that. Nah, that's not, I don't think that's her. But this one theory that I seen, though, the one that a lot of people were coming up with, like, it's very convincing. It really is. It's probably one of the more convincing theories out there. I mean, a lot of people were pointing that it was Halsey, and that kind of faded.
So check that out. We'll link to it in the show when we post it on our website, and there'll be a link in the chat for those joining us on Twitch. But that's just one of the weird kind of coincidence things, that sometimes it just takes a little while to find out some association, and it looks pretty solid, and Halo Archive knows their lore really well.
Oh, yeah, they're up there.
Yeah. I would definitely go check out that theory as to why Pharaoh is Elisa Zane. But that's going to wrap it up for now until the episode for next week. Who knows what we're going to be getting down the line. Lots of stuff coming the way. We have 3 more weeks of this podcast.
It's flying, dude. It's flying by quick.
I am honestly happily surprised by how good this podcast has been. The effort that they've put into it. The fact that every week has been a ramp up from the previous podcast, and it's built and built and built and it's kept on building. There hasn't been a dull moment in this podcast yet, which has made me super excited and super into this thing. I've been ecstatic and ready to jump on the next podcast when it comes out.
Yeah, like I said before, I think this is probably the perfect way of like getting this type of thing out there in this podcast form. Like that, I think it's probably it's perfect. It really is. Like it's you don't have to worry about YouTube or anything like that. Like a video, you're just putting voices in out there and very well acted. The quality of this is just mind blowing. Like it's blowing. It blew up when this came out too.
Mm-hmm.
Like friends that don't even really know about lore or they're not really in the know with Halo stuff like I am. Like I'm always up to date with stuff. Well, most of the part. But they heard about this and they were listening to this at work and they were telling me about it and it's just crazy how it blew up.
Mm-hmm. Enough said.
Yeah.
Until next week, guys, we will keep on coming up with other theories of what's going on. Hopefully we'll get some kind of conclusion on what happened to Mashaq, other than the fact that that was the last time that Ben heard from him, and get to find out what Group Pharaoh is really about. Maybe find out her identity, and of course what happens to Ben, because that's going to be the big question for the next 3 weeks, is what's going to be that ripple or the ripples from what Ben has just done. So with that in conclusion, thanks everyone for listening. For those that are on the Twitch stream, thank you for coming out. We have 3 more weeks of this Wednesday special, so make sure you don't miss a beat. We'll probably do the last episode on the Sunday preceding E3, because I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk about for E3. So the next 2 Wednesdays and then the Sunday after that, we're going to have some good podcast discussion regarding the finale of Hunt the Truth here. And of course, you can catch our regular episode on Thursdays at 8:30 p.m. on Twitch as well. Make sure you check that out also. Make sure you check out our social networks. We're on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Instagram. As you're listening to this live, you're already here on Twitch. Make sure that you check out our podcast network, which is thepodcast.com, and that's podcast with a K, which also has podcasts on there such as Guardian Radio, Critzcast, The Learning Cliff, Work in Progress, and How to Murder Time. Some great gaming podcasts if you're looking for something to fill your ears with during work or on your drive. They're good quality podcasts done very well, and if you're interested in any of those games that they cover as well, sources of news and content for you to go explore also. We'll see you guys back here next week, and until then, keep on hunting the truth.